This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos has said that expanding school choice options nationwide will be a priority during her tenure. Various models are being explored in various places. It's almost a certainty that people will look to Wisconsin and to Milwaukee's example in the area of school choice.
The city has been the epicenter for the movement, with options including public and private charter schools and religious voucher schools on the menu for parents and their children.
Today on the show, we look at the state of school choice in Milwaukee and the lessons it can offer. Our conversation took place recently as part of our Across the Divide series in partnership with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It was co-hosted by WUWM's Rachel Morello and the Journal Sentinel's Aaron Richards. We'll present the conversation in two parts.
In this part, we hear from two current school choice students, Raven Goins, a senior at Milwaukee Lutheran High School, and Joycelyn Medley, a senior at St. Joan Antietam High School. Raven starts by describing a typical day in school for her.
We start school at 7:50 and we end school at 3:06, but I have early release. A typical day at Milwaukee Lutheran is fun and interesting also because of my classes. Our school is very small, so we really don't have a lot of students in classes. And I'm a senior, so I usually take senior classes this year. And we usually have about 12 to 15 people in one class. The teachers are very enthusiastic, and they help you with your homework if you need help with it. You can either email them, call them, whatever you need to do, stay after school. It's just fun, and it's a great experience as a senior also.
You told me you're in choir as one of your class periods, but what is your other favorite class?
My other favorite class is pre-calculus, because of my teacher. His name is Mr. Reckley, and he's very enthusiastic. And if we don't get the lesson, he will go over the next day in a different way so other students can understand the lesson also. But I will say my favorite class is choir because of the songs and all the rehearsals we put into chapel.
And Joycelyn, your turn. Tell us about a typical day at St. Joan Antietam.
At St. Joan, we start school at 7:30. Well, most of our classes start at 7:28, but the idea is 7:30, and we have 85-minute classes, and we have five of them each day, and we have an A-B schedule. So it's kind of like a college schedule, sort of, so it gives us enough time to get the help that we need between those 2 days. And my favorite class is between English, IB Literature, and IB Global, IB History. In those classes, in English, we do poems. We do a lot of reading, and I love to read, so that's also helpful. And with IB History, we also do a lot of reading.
Okay, girls, so part of the reason why we invited you up here today is because both of you you are in a voucher school now, or you're in a private school using a voucher to attend, but you both have experience in public schools as well. I'd like you to think about some of the similarities or differences you've noticed in public schools and in your current private school, and tell me about what stands out to you in terms of differences in either academic expectations or behavior expectations. How about we do Raven first?
Okay. Like I said, my school is very small that I attend now. I used to attend Rufus King High School, and that high school was extremely large. And coming from a private school to a public school, it was kind of uncomfortable for me because I'm coming into a public school with a larger more students in one class, and it was kind of hard for me in a public school because the classes were larger, which means more students, more students talking and stuff. But in the school I am now, it's more quiet, it's more smaller, and I'm more determined to get my work done.
And Joycelyn?
I do agree with Raven. With the smaller school, it's easier to stay focused and you don't have as many distractions. Because at South Division, we had a lot of different classes, and we also had like a lot of people in classes. So it'd be like 30 kids in each class, but with St. John, it's smaller. I noticed that. And it's also helpful because we get that one-on-one help from the teachers instead of at South Division, where it was so many kids and so many problems and just one teacher. Like, sometimes you wouldn't even want to bother the teacher because she knows there's other students that need her help. So that was a big difference. And also the time of each class, so the time was also a big difference. Like, having to get up so early, because at public school, I went to school at 8:55.
Are your school days longer in the private school than they were when you went to public schools?
Yes, they're definitely longer, but it's all worth it, because they want to make sure that you understand the material and that you're able to get the help that you need and that you're able to answer questions during school. So when you get home, even if you do have questions, you can come back the next day and get the help that you need.
Okay, now I want to do the magic wand question. Each of you has a magic wand to change one thing at a school that you are at now. So no eyeballing people from their current schools. If they can change something, they're allowed to change it. You can change something at the school you go to now, or you can change something at a school that you've previously attended that you think would help more students get more out of their education and be better prepared for life after high school. Both of you are seniors, so think back on what you think is most needed for kids in the city to get a good quality education. I'll do Joycelyn first this time.
For St. John Antietam, what I wish I could change was not even just boys, but like more boys and girls. So like a more diverse and a bigger, like a bigger group of people. So I'll be able to like prepare for college and like the real world, being able to interact with all those different people. And for public schools, like I said before, just like a better relationship between the students and the teachers. I feel like that could help improve the grades, home behavior or classroom behavior, and just relationships with students, period.
I think one thing I would change about the public school was the strictness. I feel like the teachers should have been more strict on the students, so we could have got our work done and we could have went through the lessons faster than we usually would. The school I am in right now, I think I would change the classes also. I feel like it should be more diverse in my classes also, so it could feel more comfortable I could feel more comfortable with other people, and all my classmates also should feel comfortable too.
When you say diversity, Raven, you wish you had more diversity in your classes now. What sort of diversity do you mean?
I mean, in my classes, it's split up, kind of. It's usually, say, black students in one class, and then, like, I have a class with other races also. So, I mean, like, we should, like, be mixed up more so we can get to know each other more.
So a lot of the conversation that Aaron and I hear from adults about this is about resources that you guys get as students in either the school you're in now or the schools you used to be in. How do you guys feel about what kind of access you get to the things that you need to learn, whether it's teachers, books, you know, tutoring time, anything, extracurriculars even? What sort of access do you guys feel like you have or don't have to those things? Either now or in your old schools?
In the public school, like I said, we had larger classes, so it was kind of hard for the teacher to pay attention to one person at a time. And sometimes the teacher would have to come to the person the next day or probably the day after that. But in the school I am in now, the classes are smaller, so if I need help on something, the teacher can help me instantly, or I can either email my teacher or I can either call my teacher. But I feel like it's easier for me to email my teacher now than to ask in class, because I really get that one-on-one time with my teacher than I would in class.
If you wanted that one-on-one time at your previous school, how would you go about getting it?
I would usually schedule a meeting after school with my teacher.
So outside of class?
Yes.
At the beginning or the end of the day, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Okay. What about you, Joycelyn? Anything that you can think of when you think about what you need to learn and how you get access to it?
I feel like I have a lot more access to different things that will help me for the future at St. Joan. Like, we have two engineering programs that we use in the computers. One is Autodesk. That's where you, like, you build different things. Like, you can build parts, and we have a 3D printer that actually prints out the parts that you build, if you would like. And we also have MultiSTEM. That's where we build, like, different circuits and stuff to see how they work. I think those are great. And because we are a small school, we do have a lot of access to, like, different field trips or programs, like trips to Johnson's Control or just different engineering schools. And I feel like those are a great help for my future.
Raven Goins is a senior at Milwaukee Lutheran High School, and Joycelyn Medley is a senior at St. Joan Antietam High School. They were panelists at our Across the Divide event on school choice.
Presented in partnership with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, we'll hear from another group of panelists when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.
Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. We're listening to an excerpted version of our latest Across the Divide conversation held in partnership with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Our topic is the future of school choice, and it's co-hosted by Journal Sentinel education writer Aaron Richards and WUWM education reporter Rachel Morello.
Before the break, we heard from two students. Now, for the second half of our conversation, we'll turn to the adults, namely Bill Hughes, the chief academic officer of Seton Catholic Schools, Patrick Chapman, the principal of MPS's Oliver Wendell Holmes School in the Harambe neighborhood, and Fabiola Ramirez, a social studies teacher at Carmen High School of Science and Technology.
Rachel Morello asked each panelist to talk about something that's working at their school, starting with Patrick Chapman.
Well, I think at Oliver Wendell Holmes, I'm very proud that my staff, they really collaborate well together. We have a high special needs student population, so we believe in an inclusion, so those kids are included in the regular ed curriculum also, you know. So we're very versatile in meeting our kids' needs. So I really love how our staff work together. So pulling all those resources together for the benefit of the kids, that's a big thing. So I'm very proud of that.
I guess I'd have to build on that around the hard work that our teachers are doing on behalf of our kids in our network schools. And one of the key things that Seton Catholic Schools is working hard to do is to develop talent. And we have a very robust professional development program that we have in place. It's very sequential and planned out. Our school leaders are coaching around that, as well as our network team. But it's really where the rubber meets the road. Our teachers are taking what they're learning, they're working at it, they're trying it. They fail sometimes, they have success, but they come back every day and they're working really hard on behalf of kids in somewhat under-resourced schools.
For me, thinking about my experience both as a student and then now as a teacher at Carmen Schools, I think definitely the culture that we have established is something I think we do very well. Walking the halls in 2012 as a high schooler and then now as a teacher, I feel the same welcoming environment, the same environment that asks students to try their best. We have the same high expectations. Specifically at Carmen Southeast, I think our teachers, us as teachers, have done a great job at making sure that our students feel welcome, that they feel that they can handle the curriculum no matter what school they come from. And I think that's our biggest asset, our culture.
Okay, and now for a classic question in the spirit of the Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump debate kicker question. You have to say something you think is working really well in a sector that you don't work in. So, Pat, you work in a public school.
Right.
What's a strategy that you've seen work in a voucher school or a non-MPS charter school?
Wow. Okay.
You have to say something nice about the other side.
Something that's really working well in a private school that I noticed?
Yes, that you've noticed in your own experience?
I would say the accountability of parental involvement. I think in private schools, you can hold the parents more accountable than you can in public schools. So I would say that. I think that's working really well in the public and private schools' favor. Mm-hmm. So I would say that.
So, Bill, you work in a private Catholic school system now, but you certainly have lots of experience in the public schools. What do you think public schools do well in this city, or what's a strategy you've seen working well at a single traditional public school?
So I think one of the biggest things that is going on in public schools is that people are changing their perspectives about charter and choice schools, and that they're interested in creating successful schools in our city. And so what I see happening is a different perspective around what is possible for kids, and it's time to build out successful schools.
Okay, and Fabiola, you're in a charter school now, so you get your choice of talking about something you've seen work in a voucher school or something that you've seen work in a traditional public school, either as a student or as a teacher.
I benefited greatly from Milwaukee Public Schools. There's no doubt about that. I went to Milwaukee Public Schools as an elementary student and then also as a middle school student. I had great experiences in both schools. I think absolutely the diversity and that those schools bring and the ability to cater to students with different needs, whether it's ELL students, students with special needs, I think that's definitely something admirable. I went to a bilingual school, and the help that I got there is not comparable to what I've received in other schools and other sectors. I was able to become fluent in English in just a year and a half at my elementary school, thanks to the amazing teachers that I had.
That's great. All right.
Okay, now we're going to zoom out for a second. We are living in a time where the national climate has never been more favorable for school choice opportunities. You have a president and an education secretary that are very favorable toward charter schools, and Betsy DeVos has had a lot of experience propelling forward programs that send more public money to private schools. But both the House and the Senate have crafted education bills that don't include any extra money for those choice programs as they were proposed. Betsy DeVos has said recently that likely indicates most of the action, if it happens, it's going to happen at the state level. So based on your experiences working in the schools you do in Milwaukee, if other states are going to go forward with creating new school choice programs, what can they learn from the Milwaukee experience? What do you think they should heed from the laboratory of school choice that we've developed here?
Well, I think that what they could learn from Milwaukee is that, you know, they need to be informed about what we went through, because it's still a growing process, and I think parents are becoming more informed about what school districts, especially what private and public, really offer in regards to resources. Milwaukee Public Schools, we have plenty of resources. We believe in having every child college and career ready. So it's up to the families, the children, to take advantage of what's out there. I mean, the resources are very plentiful on a personal level. My children both attended private school, but they also attended public schools, and they're both graduates of Riverside University High School. And that high school really prepared my son to graduate from Whitewater in 4.5 years as a full-time athlete. Riverside exposed him to AP classes, honor classes that were free. And I was paying as a parent when he attended a private school. So when you dig a little bit further and see what each school offer, and parents could be informed and everything, I think that's what they can learn, you know.
Bill, what would you recommend?
So I'd say two things. One is accountability. We need to have accountability. At Seton Catholic Schools, that was one of the first decisions we made, is that we're going to have full transparency around our results. We'll live and die on our results, but I think states going forward should avoid the trap of not being held accountable. If you're having public funds come into your schools, the accountability piece is really important. Second thing is, don't spend so many years talking about it and lamenting over the battle. At least here in Milwaukee, choice is here to stay. Choice is going to be here to stay in a lot of states. And so how can you focus around creating highly successful schools for kids don't waste a generation of kids fighting about stuff?
I can only speak to my very limited experience in both Carmen High Schools and Milwaukee Public Schools, but I think that something states could learn if they're going forward with choice is that choice doesn't need to exist without public schools. I think charter schools like Carmen High School, we work under Milwaukee Public Schools and we are a public school. And that model can also exist in other places without diminishing the ability of public schools or even private schools. We can all coexist in some way as long as there's accountability, and I think as long as we are really keeping the schools that are doing great things for kids alive, and those who that aren't, that we're finding ways to fix them.
Billy and Fabiola, a little bit, you guys are talking about accountability, and if we're bringing it back locally, voucher schools are now starting to be drawn into the state report card system that we already use for public schools. They measure things like student achievement and improvement over the course of the year. So I guess this is a two-part question. Are the report cards measuring the right things, and are they a fair way to judge school quality?
Well, in my opinion, MPS has always been transparent with our data. And so we've always been ahead of a lot of things with voucher schools, private schools, et cetera. Well, when we talk about accountability, also, let's talk about the number of kids that leave private schools and return back to public schools. You know, to keep the playing field level, that money needs to follow those kids back, okay, when we talk about resources. In regards to the DPI report card, a lot of schools are being classified as failing schools because they lose 5 points for a student attendance. So there's like, I believe, 5 or 6 categories when you rate a school, fail to meet expectations, meet few expectations, then meet expectations, then exceed expectations. Well, there's a lot of schools that are missing meeting expectations because 5 points are deducted off that report, the DPI report card, if you have an absenteeism rate of 13% or more. So that's 5 points off the bat that a school loses. So my question is, how much, and we have all the tools in place, that's one great thing about NPS, we attack every problem with vigilance, okay? We had attendance liaisons. We go out there and try to increase attendance. But my question is that more of a school issue or a parenting issue to get a kid in school? And should the school be penalized for that? Because when you put failing schools, when you classify a school as failing schools because they missed that those 5 points, you know, if you look at the data will show that a lot of schools will in MPS will meet or exceed expectations if they had that 5 points. So that's called being informed. That's what I mean, just being informed about the DPI report card. You asked me, do I think it's fair? As of right now, a lot of MPS schools are not being portrayed accurately in that regard.
So Seton Catholic Schools will have its first wave of schools being in the state report card because that'll be released in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's because last year when we first started to transition the first wave of schools in, we had all of our kids take the forward exam. There's some people in the audience here tonight, as well as myself, who have built out other previous reporting systems for DPI over probably the last 10, 15, 20 years. And one of the things that I've learned in that kind of experience is I know what I can control and I know what we can't control. And we have the report card that we have. We can spend a lot of time debating about that, and there's a place for that, maybe tonight, but I mean in meetings. But to change that report card is pretty tough. So the question is, what do you do with the results that you have with the report card? And part of the value of the report card is it communicates to parents to be able to make choices and have informed choices about their child's school. And we know that we have a number of voucher schools in our city that have kids going to schools that are on the failing list. And they still send their kids to those schools. Those schools should be closed, in my opinion. The key thing here, though, is parents will be informed. And then what do the school leaders What do the network people do with the results? And then how do you have conversations with faculty, with parents, informing them, here's what your school looks like, here's what we need to do differently in our instructional program, here's how we need to engage kids differently. So the report card's coming out. There's gonna be a lot of talk about what that looks like in the next couple of weeks. You guys probably could do a panel discussion on that at some point. But the fact of the matter is, what do you do with the results? And how do you use that to improve programming for kids and have parents be able to make good choices?
Bill Hughes of Seton Catholic Schools, Patrick Chapman of MPS's Oliver Wendell Homeschool, and Fabiola Ramirez of Carmen High School of Science and Technology. They were part of our Cross the Divide conversation on the future of school choice. It was held in partnership with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
The conversation was moderated by WUWM's Rachel Morello and the Journal Sentinel's Aaron Richards and was recorded in front of an audience at Anodyne Coffee in Walker's Point. You can read more about the event at WUWM.com.